Well, hi there. Once again, no theme song, but I'm working on it. This is the Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Paul Zeidman, and I'm quite thrilled to have as my guest today. He is a writer, he's a novelist, and also a film studies professor. So I got to be on my best behavior, or else I'm going to get detention. And he's also an award-winning screenwriter as well. John Engel, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast.
Thank you for having me. I gotta correct you about the novelist part only because I did one graphic novel one time, and that's it. And I do not feel like that qualifies me as a novelist. That said, I've written some fiction, but never to completion and never released in any way. It's just I'm a screenwriter.
Well,
I'll just put it that way.
years ago, I saw Shane Black at a like a writing conference, and someone got up to during the Q&A and said, "You know, and I'm an aspiring screenwriter." And he said, "Let me stop you right there. If you can't call yourself an aspiring screenwriter, that means you're aspiring means you want to write. That if you're a screenwriter who writes, you are a screenwriter. You know, you may not have sold anything, you may not be produced or have representation, but you should definitely consider yourself a screenwriter. So don't call yourself an aspiring screenwriter or an aspiring novelist. You wrote a graphic novel, you've written novels, you are, quotes and quotes, a novelist."
I guess. I mean, like I said, I've never finished a novel. And it's interesting because right now I'm going through the very last stages of my MFA in creative writing. I decided to go get that terminal degree for some reason. And you have to do interdisciplinary stuff. So I've been doing screenwriting the whole time, but I had to take a couple of semesters of something else. So I took fiction. And so I've been like churning out these chapters of novels, but like two, and then I never write anything more of that novel. As a matter of fact, I use that more as like a pre-writing exercise and then convert these ideas into screenplays. So at
There
the
you
end of
go.
the day, my aspiration is simply to be a screenwriter, not so much a novelist, though
Well,
it would
that
be kind of
works.
cool. It would
That
be kind
still
of
works.
cool.
That still works. But the important thing is that you're writing, and that really is what it all comes down to. So,
For
John,
sure.
as regular viewers and listeners of the show are familiar with, we like to start things off each week. What have you been reading and or watching? And I'll go first, so give you some time to collect your thoughts. I've really been enjoying Shogun on Hulu. I think that is a phenomenal show. I'm up to episode three. I think episode four has dropped, so if so, I haven't got to it yet. Loving that. I think they're doing a fantastic job. I'm also really enjoying Masters of the Air, which is on Apple TV Plus. I loved it, the subject matter, but I think they're taking it in a different direction. But now, like the episode I just watched, D-Day happened. Which really clever is there's only like a 5 second reference to the invasion. Like they have like a clip of all the boats heading to the shore, and then the rest of it's all just the characters talking about it, like leading up to it. Boom, there's the invasion, and then everything is like afterward. And I just think that was a really clever way to go about it. And so now they're winding down. The U.S. or the Allies have invaded Europe, and so it's it'd be interesting to see how it goes. And I saw two movies since last time. One, my wife and I really wanted to see it. It's called Drive Away Dolls by, I think, Ethan Coen and his partner. Boy, what a disappointment that was. I was led to believe it was going to be this really hilarious, Coen Brothers-esque comedy. And there are some great samples of the dialogue, but there's just the story was just really kind of flat, and it seemed like they were really padding. It was only like 1 hour and 24 minutes long, and it really felt like they were adding some extended visual things just to like pad it out, and we were really disappointed with it. However, the antidote to that was 2 days later, we went to see this really small independent movie called Hundreds of Beavers, and it was been writ written and made by this filmmaker. I want to say he's based maybe in Green Bay or possibly some like in that region of the country. And it is black and white, and it's almost a silent movie, but all the characters make noises and there's sound effects. And I think there's like one word spoken in the entire thing, but everything else is visual. And it was just hilarious. And I just could not get over how innovative and original and smart this movie was, that at least watch the trailer. And if you get the chance to see this, you will not go wrong. And even if you have kids, they're gonna love it too. And if you don't have kids, you're still gonna love it. But I cannot recommend this movie enough. It's called Hundreds of Beavers, and I don't have the filmmaker's name here, but just Google Hundreds of Beavers. Be careful which one do you go to, but still, I think you'll really, really like it. I highly recommend it. So I've rambled on enough. John, what about you?
Well, I've been watching some of those things too. I heard about Hundreds of Beavers, and it is playing or was playing at the independent cinema here in Kansas City, called the Screenland Theater. But I didn't, I just saw posters and I kind of was like, what is going on with this? And I just kind of move on with my day. So that's good to get that recommendation, because I do want to check out. It sounds like fun. I mean, if this movie is called Hundreds of Beavers and everybody's like, you should see it, I don't know why I wouldn't be so curious as to see it.
Well, it's like, kind of live action Looney Tunes is the best way I can put it. And once you see it, you'll understand why.
So I want to see that. I also saw Drive Away Dolls, and I don't know if you want to talk about it a little bit. I really didn't like it either. And I had some real, I developed some ideas about what I think went wrong with that movie. And it's kind of funny because I'm not a plotty kind of guy as a writer or as a film watcher, critic, whatever. I'm not really often that interested in the plot of a movie, right? Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's fine I want it to be good and I want it to be cohesive to a certain extent. But if you want to just have a vibe of a movie where the plot doesn't really matter that much, that can be great too, as long as the characters, as long as everything else comes together. And what I started thinking about with Drive Away Dolls was Repo Man for some reason. And maybe it was just the opening things in the trunk, you know? But Repo Man like starts with this bizarre guy in a weird car, gets pulled over, something weird happens, the cop gets zapped, right? And then the rest of the movie were mainly with Otto and all the guys at the repo place, and the car keeps popping in and out. There's a bit of a thread of a plot there, but it's kind of inconsequential. And in that sense, like, I don't care. I really don't care what's going on in the trunk of Repo Man. It's just kind of cool, and it turns the car green, and it floats away at the end. But with Drive Away Dolls, they open with the plot, right? There's this cold open with Pedro Pascal. And then the rest, and there's a lot of detail to it, and then the rest of the movie keeps coming back to it, keeps coming back to these villains that are pursuing these girls who are doing this drive away, which has some real specific like rules to it, right? You get the car, you drive it to a specific place, it's got to end up there. And the entire time I was saying, you know where they're going. They have to go to this place. Why are you chasing them all over creation? Not to mention, if what they wanted by the end of the movie was the specific thing, they got it, didn't they, at the beginning of the movie? Isn't that the point? Why did they have to put it in this car? And I was like, dang it, why? If you could have just like riffed on the plot instead of making it so important that you kept coming back to it and thinking it was so clever when you did these reveals, I wouldn't care so much. But because you did, it really was just plot wise awful. I thought the plot made no sense.
Well, the plot was really flimsy, and I didn't really care about the two main characters. That it like, what is it they really wanted? And I just thought it was not even half baked. Like they made it in the kitchen and forgot to put it in the oven. That's like as far as they got it. That it was
cookie
just
dough.
Really
yeah
yeah
maybe,
it was
maybe.
Yeah, it was just really just I just think a poorly organized story. And it was really, I mean, the trailer made me think it was going to be like this really hilarious, you know, comedy. And there were, like I said, there were a few moments that were amusing. But for the most part, just really, really disappointed with it.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed them, the characters, from time to time. Mm-hmm. There were some funny bits. I think both of them are destined to be stars, to be honest with you. I really like them. But I didn't think they were given enough, really to hang their characters on.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, I was left very cold by it. But so I agree with you there. I've also been watching Shogun. I have seen the fourth episode already, so it is out. And I'm loving that show. And I am really off of TV right now, too. So it's really something that a show has gotten my attention, because I've kind of just grown weary of television. It's hard to explain that. But maybe it's just too much. It's just overload, and I can't keep up. And it's also becoming a little bit homogenized. I think there's a little bit of a formula going on with how everything's executed, how dialogue is executed. How little care often there is in how the show looks. Like, a lot of times shows just are all flat, and the coverage and everything is all real basic. And Shogun's not that at all. It's beautiful to look at. Even the CGI like rendered stuff looks good, which I'm usually a little skeptical of. It looks like they're doing some really great practical set work. But I'm also a huge sucker for just the Japanese aesthetic. I'm a Japanese cinema freak. So all of it put together is making for a very enjoyable show. And I'm really enjoying the performance of this guy, the Englishman. He's kind of a bit of an off-brand Tom Hardy, but in a good way, you know? And I'm really enjoying his performance. And then I have all the major characters of the Japanese characters are all really great too. So I've been looking forward. It's the first time I've looked forward to a show in a while. So, and been watching it week after week. So that one's going great too.
Excellent. But, excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, John Ingle, since this is the Creative Writing Life podcast, let's talk about John Ingle, the writer. So are you the type of writer that you've always been one, like, you know, ever since you were little, or did you kind of like come into it later on in life? Like what is the story? Like what got you into writing? And to follow that up, like what kind of stuff do you like to write?
Well, I've always been a writer of some kind. Even when I was a kid, I would sketch down ideas and drawings and things and make little stories that were ridiculous and stupid. But and then when I became a cinephile, so to speak, probably when I was about 9 or 10, when we really started renting movies and my parents would take me to the video store. And I was raised in a very religious household, so we were like very limited in what we could watch. But there was one video store near us that was owned by this old couple, and they stocked the place like TCM. It was basically TCM in there. Almost everything they had was classic, those old classic kind of crappy VHS tapes. And so I was raised watching Hitchcock and all that kind of stuff, and became aware of the concept of filmmaking somewhat early. So I immediately, that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to conjure up take my daydreams and make them to a movie somehow. And I had no idea how to do that. So even all the way through high school, when I was writing creative writing in high school, and even into my 20s, I really didn't know what screenwriting was. I would try to do it, but what I did was nothing like what screenwriting is, you know? So yes, I've always been doing it, but it was about 17, 18 years ago that I actually kind of buckled down and really learned the craft of screenwriters, started to. It took a while for me, I think, to get it down, obviously. But I would say, yeah, I've always been a writer, but I've been a screenwriter for about 17 years or so. As far as what I like to write all kinds of things. I've written different things, horror, comedy, thrillers, what have you. But I've learned recently that I think I'm a thriller writer. I think that's pretty much what my wheelhouse is. And people tell you, right? Like you hear that a lot, that you kind of need to find a niche. Like it helps you. Like once you find that niche and you get some success in there, I mean, it's good to have it because they kind of pigeonhole you a lot of the times anyway. So you might as well already be in that pigeonhole before you get there. But yeah, I enjoy writing thrillers and action thrillers. And I think I've got a knack for it. I've been told I have a knack for it. Now, I don't know if I have a knack for every element of the screenwriting, but writing action specifically, I've always gotten attention. So remember, like I had a meeting like right before I met you in Austin, I had a meeting with a guy, and that's all he wanted to talk about. He didn't care about the script that much. Like it's the story that much. He just wanted to talk about my style and like, what else could I do using that style? Maybe this and that. It was just a manager meeting kind of thing, you know, like a general meeting, I guess. And, you know, it didn't go very well. The meeting didn't go very well, but because I was thrown off, I thought I was pitching. And really, he just wanted to talk about, why do you write the way you do? It's interesting how you write. I'm like, okay. Well, I kind of half stole it from Walter Hill and went from there, you know. But that's where I kind of enjoy, obviously I enjoy doing it, but I enjoy getting the attention. Like when people say things like that, I'm like, that must mean I'm going in the right direction. I got to keep doing it that way. So I've been really focusing lately on thrillers, action, and a little bit. I've got a pilot I'm working on right now that's a bit of a comedy, but it's very dark. It's more like drama, like FX style dramedy. You know what I mean? Where it's about 70-30 drama to comedy. And then there is action. It is a crime. It is a crime genre sort of thing. But still kind of sticking to the action adventure or action thriller.
Okay. So actually, let's take it back a step because you mentioned Austin. So back in 2020, you and your co-writer, Sean Jordan, you had the script Open House, and that won for best horror feature. So what's the log line for that? And what was the experience of, I guess, putting the story together? And did anything come of it, of the Austin win?
Of all of the things to ask for a log line for, we have both had the hardest time with the log line for this thing.
As writers, too.
It's, I know, but some of my other stuff, I'm much better at it. This one, for some reason, has always been a problem for us on the log line front. Maybe that's an indicator, like the reason why we've had some trouble getting it to move. But the log line for that one is a contained thriller, contained horror thriller about a family that lives in a mountain home. The wife is pregnant. The father of the child has just been let go as from his position at a prison as the warden. They're moving out. And they're having the open house that day. So the realtor shows the house while they're away, but after the realtor leaves, two people stay behind. So when the family comes home, they're attacked by these two people, and we slowly learn that it has to do with the husband's past as a warden, and then why it is that he was let go, and how maybe he's not such a great guy after all. And I don't know how, it's not a very good pitch of it, but it went over really well. The script went over really well, and it has this one incredibly shocking bit of gore in it that, you know how, like, I don't know if you've had this experience, but you write something and everybody has different notes about everything, and then they all hit that one note, like, this is where I would really, like, really got my attention, was when this happened, and you know that you caught their attention. That's why the script, I think that's why the script moved. Even though I got a more nuanced, I don't know if you I had a chance to tell you this, but at the Driscoll, I was having beers at the bar, watching the Chiefs on TV. Right, I'm from Kansas City. I'm watching the Chiefs, and this guy comes up and stands in between me and the TV. I'm looking around him. I'm saying, "Sorry, I'm watching the Chiefs." And he points at his hat, and he's wearing a Royals hat and then a
Oh.
Chiefs jersey. And I was like, "Hey, get to talking to this guy. He's originally from Kansas City." And then as we talk, it turns out he's the reader. He was the Austin reader that pushed us into the finals. He's the one that read Open
Wow.
House and put us in the final. I immediately bought him a drink, of
Of
course, and then hit
course.
it off with him, and we're friends now. But he had more nuanced things. He still remembered the script, and he had more nuanced things to say than just that one scene. But that's how it goes, right? Like, with man, like, I looked at that guy and I said, "You're the whole reason. Like, anybody else reads this, I bet we never would have made it." You know, that's what's funny about screenwriting competitions. But as far as what's been going on with it, we got a bunch of heat right after, but it was 2020. And
Oh.
so we're still not sure if we got a fair break. Like, we didn't get to go to Austin because it was COVID. We're still in lockdown. We didn't get to experience the festival. And then all of our meetings were Zoom meetings, of course, but a lot of people used COVID as a reason for not, optioning it, not taking us on as clients, because we were looking to be repped at the time as well. And nothing really came of it, though. It still has, there's like a cinder of heat still left on it. We occasionally will still have someone reach out. We had a thing going on in Thailand, of all places, but the strike broke. And I think the strike breaking, like, we were just in preliminary talks, and Sean was talking to them as a director. I was out of the negotiations altogether. And then when the strike broke, we haven't heard from them since.
Oh,
So I don't know
wow.
what's going on, but right now it's, it is what it is. But
Okay,
it's
that's
it what it did for me, I'll tell you, Paul, is it ushered me into a world that I hadn't been in yet, which was this world of meetings, this world of actually thinking something might happen for you, even when it doesn't. Just getting that sense makes you feels like you've stepped into a new world, and I felt like, wow, okay, there's actually a chance here that something might happen. Maybe not with this one, but I just got to keep writing and putting them out there, and maybe this will happen again, and better timing will be better, So that's mainly what I got out of that experience. And I don't write with Sean. Sean's a friend of mine, but we don't write together anymore. So we've both gone our separate ways as writers. So maybe it's for the best too, because you end up getting packaged with people, I've been told. Probably best that that didn't happen.
Okay, well, and let's talk about your other script, The Lamb. Now that was a quarterfinalist in the Nickel and also a finalist for the Action Adventure category at Page. So can you talk a little bit about that one? And I know being a finalist at Page is definitely a prestigious honor. So like tell us a little bit about the script and also did anything come of that placement?
Well, yeah, I still have the Page placement, Launchpad, actually. I was in the top 100 in Launchpad. That got me meetings. As a matter of fact, I'm still talking to someone through that, through meeting the who found me through Launchpad. And then the Nickel went through. When the Nickel finally went through, as a lot of people listening might know, it took forever for the Nickel placements to actually come through, even though I found out what mine was months ago. when it went through and hit Coverfly, the Lamb jumped into the top 20 scripts on the whole website. And immediately after that, I got downloads and emails and calls and things, and I have a meeting on it actually tomorrow. So those things are happening with it. As far as where it came from, it was, I'm from rural Northwest Missouri. Okay. So like middle of nowhere, north of Kansas City, east of St. Joseph, Missouri. And I'm always thinking I had kind of a weird upbringing religiously. And then I had a weird kind of young adulthood with the, let's just say with some of the more lascivious like elements of small towns in the Midwest.
Okay.
And was adjacent to a lot of really crazy stuff. And some of my friends actually went into really crazy lives. So I was always thinking about, you know, I like to write thrillers and crime and things like that. So I was always thinking about what's a good rural like noir sort of idea. And I just kind of came up with this idea of this. I'm also a divorced dad. So I was thinking about a family that's split with a kid, a woman, a man, and a kid in between, and they're split. And she's bound to the small town. The mom is bound to the small town by the custody agreement. The dad is kind of a low-level crime boss in the area. And she just needs the kid to turn 18 and decide to go with her, and they're going to get the hell out, right? But before that happens, the kid trying to impress his dad, who wants all this respect from his dad, goes along on a crime, on a heist with him that goes horribly wrong. And then fearing for his life from his own father and his crew, runs to mom, who is oddly aware of things like the criminal world, and takes him on the run. And he finds out slowly that his mom and his dad used to be a criminal team at one time, and she stepped away when they broke up and tried to clean up her life. So it ends up becoming, it's heavy on car chases. Everybody, these are former race, like stock car drivers turned, you know, country folk, crime bosses, or in her case, she owns a little car lot. And there's lots of growling engines, barracudas and such, and cops chasing and gunplay. And I just go a good old fashioned car chase action movie, rural style, but with a lot of noir elements and I think a lot of heart. That's what I hope. That's what I like to get. All this like bang, bang, cars driving, crashes and action. I love all that stuff as long as it has heart to it. You know, I want there to be an emotional center and actual real characters in it. So that's what I hope that accomplishes. And it seems to be doing okay. People seem to be connecting with it. So that one's, I feel like I got a little heat on that one. I think I need a little bit more. I just did a major revision that now I think I'm going to recirculate that this year and see what happens. So I'm going to try the old major rewrites and send it back out to some of the competitions I didn't do so good in and see what happens this time. So
no, that's fantastic. Okay. So, the one thing I did want to also talk to you about today, though. So for anybody listening and or watching, you know, John has that, he's got that really, you know, soothing, melodious kind of voice that, you know, it's just easy to listen to. And so part of the reason I know John is that he is the, would you call it former co-host or just co-host?
Yeah. Present co-host,
okay, still the co-host of the Alien Minute podcast, which is part of the Movies by Minute podcast organization. I'm a huge fan of some of those as well. So, okay, so John, I'm going to let you explain what the Movies by Minute concept is, and then lead into like how did you get into doing the Alien Minute podcast?
Well, okay, so I was listening to the show James Bonding. Have you ever heard James Bonding with Matt Gourley and Matt Myra is his name?
Mm-hmm.
Just because somebody told me, oh, it's a really funny show about James Bond. And I thought, oh, this will be fun. And Matt Gourley mentioned Star Wars Minute. And the guys on the show were like, what are you talking about? Well, it's a show where they talk about Star Wars in 1 minute increments. And I said, well, that's my thing right there. And I immediately went to it and just shotgunned them, man. Like I was all the way. I they'd already done Empire. So I'd listened to Star Wars and Empire like really quickly. I emailed them a couple of times with some thoughts and things, you know, and got to sort of come in contact with them. When I wrote my graphic novel, I actually asked them to advertise it for me. So I got to meet them and they read it and everything. And which was kind of crazy in hindsight because Alex Robinson's like an Eisner Award winning cartoonist and my graphic novel is not well drawn. We'll just say that. So I got to know him kind of through that. And then somebody, I can't remember which came first. I think it was Goodfellas Minute popped up. And I said, oh, other people are doing it. And they're friends of Pete and Alex. And then a Back to the Future minute popped up and I went, wait a minute. And then they announced at some point that they were like, hey, yeah, if anybody wants to do a movie, boy, they didn't realize what they were doing when they did mm-hmm. that. I said, you know, well, my first thought was I'd love to do Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right. But there was a weird, this guy, Tom Taylor mm-hmm. pops up on the Star Wars Minute Facebook and says, we've got a show coming. And I don't know why, but I knew that that's what he was doing. And I said, okay, never mind. I think that they're doing Indiana Jones. So I decide, oh, Alien would be a great one. And then I thought, oh, my screenwriting mentor, my friend, Mitch Bryan, and I have had long conversations about Alien before. We've seen it a few times together and we talk about it and how great it is. And so I reach out to him, let's do a podcast about Alien. Sure. And he did not understand that we were going to do 120 episodes about Alien, right? One for each minute. So that's how it started. And then, you know, we ended up all kind of crossing paths. Like we were on Indiana Jones Minute with Tom and those guys. We've been on Star Wars Minute. I've been on, I don't know, at least a dozen of different Minute shows, which are numbering up at 250 or something now.
Yeah, there's a
lot. Last time I looked, it was a lot. So I think we ended up being like number 7 or something on the list of, you know, so I don't know what else to say about it. It's like a crazy endeavor, and we did not know what we were getting into. And I even by the time we got to Aliens, I started having a nervous breakdown. I'm not even kidding. So much pressure on trying to get 5 episodes out a week, you know. I guess I'm not explaining to the people what the show is exactly.
I think you kind of touched on it. I just want to kind of like elaborate on it just a little. So when he says that they discuss these movies 1 minute at a time, that an episode can be anywhere from like 12 to 45 minutes long. It's usually the two hosts and oftentimes a guest, and they'll talk mm-hmm. about what happens in that minute of the film. And they'll like, it starts with, Ripley waking up from hypersleep, whatever, and then ends with Carter Burke knocking on her door. And they'll talk about what happens in that minute. But I've also noticed, because I've listened to I've done Star Wars Minute, Back to the Future, and the Indiana Jones one. And after meeting you, that's what inspired me. Okay, I'm going to start listening, because I like Aliens a little bit more than Aliens. So I'm starting with Aliens. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying that. And so that the panelists on the show, they'll talk about what happens in that minute, but they'll also maybe like go into like, here's what happened during production, or here's a little thing that mm-hmm. happened with the special effects, or hey, if you take a look at, you know, this is a matte, this is where the matte painting ends, and this is where the practical effects start to take place, and oh hey, here's this, it's different in the script. And so they go into all these details about the film. It's not necessarily limited to that 1 minute. And what I really enjoy just about all of these shows is I'm huge fans of these movies, and sometimes I'll hear things I've heard before, but a lot of times I'll hear things I didn't know, or hey, yeah, that's what a great approach to that, or I love, you know, just hear love hearing people talk about it as much as I love hearing about it. And I think it's just so brilliant in that, you know, Pete and Alex, who started it all with Star Wars Minute, again, I'm sure they had no idea it was going to explode like it did.
No.
Because, you know, you think of any popular movie, probably like in the last, you know, 40 years, there's probably a that movie by minute podcast about it.
Yeah, seems that way. I mean, even some people are even doing, you know, Casablanca and things like that, you know, going that far back, which I would love to do that. There's always a lot to talk about with a movie like that. With Alien, there's just so much with a guy like Ridley Scott, there's going to be so much detail to talk about. Like, there's so many little things. Like, I never knew before we started doing the show that there were like Mr. Coffee, the same thing they used for Mr. Fusion in Back to the Future. They had those stuck around the ship, but not to be coffee makers, like just to look futuristic, you know, and all these little things that were around, and like the you know, just the history of Ridley Scott as a commercial director and things like that. We'd bring those things in and just fill out the minute. We started off like we didn't really realize how much we could talk about. So we were doing like 10-minute episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we've done, you know, episodes about 1 minute that were like 90 minutes long in the future. Like sometimes you just get on in a conversation. It'll be a big moment of the movie, or there'll be a big topic for some reason. I remember I had Tasha Robinson and Kwame Opum, who I believe they were both at the Vulture at the time. We had them on, and we were on Aliens. It was just me and those two. And the subject of Jeanette Goldstein being cast came up, right? Which becomes a big topic when you think about it. It's like, she is not Latinx at all, right? So let's talk about, and that turned out to be like our most controversial episode. It really made people angry and weirdly, you know, but it was a big topic and we got to talk it out, you know. But then sometimes it's just fun. You're just talking about why did they choose this moment, like screenplay wise. So we ended up focusing, you know, because we're screenwriters, we end up focusing on story a lot of the time. And sometimes that's a turnoff to people. Like a lot of people that started listening to our show, I would see on other chat or, you know, Facebook groups or whatever for other Movies by Minute shows, like, yeah, those Alien Minute guys are just too dry for me, or they're too cerebral or too intellectual. I see that a lot. I'm like, yeah, that's how we approach it. Like Pete and Alex are more comedic and more pop culture-y. Yeah. And they're both really smart guys, but I think they're more attuned to fun than Mitch and I are. Mitch and I are more like academics. I guess we are literally both academics. So I don't know. So our show, but we've always been proud that our show differentiated itself that way. So, and we do have a decent following, and it does continue. I say presently, we're not covering Alien movies anymore, but we still keep our podcast feed alive with a lot of commentaries. We'll just do commentaries on different movies or find another theme. Like, I think we're about to do a commentary on Starship Troopers. And, or we did a few, I think it was 4 episodes on The Thing. We did a bunch of episodes on Alien 3. We were never going to do a whole season on Alien 3 or Alien Resurrection.
I was just about to ask. I know you did Alien and Aliens, but what about Alien 3 and all of the rest after that?
We don't care for those movies that much. So we weren't about to dedicate our lives. Now, some of these people, they are committed to the bit, you know, to the point that they'll push all the way through these, like the Tom and Pete and Jerry at Indiana Jones Minute did The Crystal Skull, and I would have never done it. I'm sorry. Like,
I'm still waiting for them to do Dial of Destiny.
They're working. They'll do it. I think they're just kind of like making it, you know, kind of giving it a little room to breathe and for more people to see it on Disney Plus and so on. But I think they're going to do it. I don't speak for them, even though I do talk to Pete and Tom, at least I talk to almost daily because we're all really good friends now. I do other podcasts with Tom and Pete from Star Wars Minute, and then our friend Joe as well. We've been podcasting for years together. Did a podcast about every song on the Devo catalog, so it was a music podcast. And then we moved on to Star Trek. So we did every episode of Star Trek: The Original Series in alphabetical order. That was called ABCDTOS, and we are presently recording episodes of ABCDTNG.
Oh, wow!
So we'll be having, I'll tell you that with that show, it's a lot more fun than what we do on Alien Minute, I think, and Loose. And it's mainly, it kind of feels like we all live in different places in the country and we're just trying to stay friends, stay talking, you know? So that show's coming too. So that just to, you know, hit on some other shows that I do as well, but, I don't know what else you wanted to hear.
Well, one of the things I really enjoy about, especially when you have a guest on, because that when you start the season, that you and your co-host will talk about, like, what's your history with the movie? Like, like I think you had said you saw Aliens first before you saw Alien.
I did. Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's kind of what it was for me too. But I think part of the reason I enjoy Aliens more just because I like the roller coaster ride that it is. And I also just think it's more of a fun movie. I mean, you know, granted, Alien is a great movie, but it's a haunted house. It's Jaws in space. Whereas Aliens, I like the Colonial Marines going in and just all getting wiped out. And if that's a spoiler for you, you know, it's almost 40 years ago.
You're a little late. Yeah.
I think the statute of limitations has run out on that one, but I really like hearing, like, you know, do you always ask a guest, like, when did you see it? Like, how have you, was this a part of your growing up type of thing? Or, you know, everyone knows, like, oh, game over, man, game over, you know, that kind of thing. Everybody knows that kind of thing. And you talk about the impact the movie's had on not just the guests, but also sometimes on pop culture, or like the results of that movie just existing. Like, you know, how has it affected you as a writer or as a moviegoer or just, you know, as a filmmaker? And I just love hearing about that kind of thing. And I love how the hosts of the Minute podcast are able to draw that out of their guest, because everybody, they're really enthusiastic about the movie, which is really important. And just hearing their love and appreciation of the subject matter, I think that makes for a more enjoyable podcast. And I just think it's great. It's great that you're able to do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I'll never do the Minute thing again. Like, that's never happening again. But it's a lot of fun to talk to these people. And we've gotten some really cool guests that I don't think we would have had access to without the podcast, you know. And we did a short run of a James Bond version of it called 007 by 7, where we broke it down into 7 minute increments. So it was much more palatable.
Sure.
We did about 15, 16 episodes, and we did Dr. No and From Russia with Love. But really, like you were saying earlier about like any popular movie, you know, is getting the minutes by movies by minute treatment. Well, James Bond is getting every kind of podcast treatment. Like, I don't know how many James Bond podcasts there are out there. And we should have thought about that because it was just so saturated. We were just never going to catch on just because we're talking about it 7 minutes at a time or something. But we had some really great guests on there, like Bond scholars, which exist.
Wow.
People that literally are like known to write about James Bond and know all this
stuff.
I got
my master's in James Bond.
And people teach, all kinds of places where they teach classes on Bond or Fleming or whatever.
Wow.
So that was cool. Mitch is more of the Bond guy than me. So that was more his like, kind of his sandbox, where I'm more of a, I like James Bond, but I also have a lot of problems with James Bond. And I would sort of be skeptical about some things and like, why? And people would say, oh, you're going to go all the way through the Moore movies. It's like, I would never talk about Roger Moore movie. Like I enjoy them sometimes, but good Lord, I'm not spending my life talking about Roger Moore, James Bond movies.
You have the George Connerys. Lazenby fan club showing up.
I love that movie, but, I don't know about Lazenby, he's fine, but I've always been like, God, if Connery just would have stuck around for one more, that would be our greatest Bond movie. I'm absolutely positive of that. And I don't buy into what people say that he couldn't have handled that more emotional style of Bond. I'm like, absolutely not true. Are you kidding? Of course Sean Connery could have done that role. That's ridiculous. It would have been amazing to see. So on Her Majesty's Secret Service definitely would have been, I think, the greatest ever. But even with Lazenby in it, I think it's an excellent movie. So,
okay, fantastic.
Not to get off topic onto Bond too much.
No, because that's a great segue into what I want to talk about with you now is that another one of your job titles is film studies professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. So, when you're doing film studies course, what are some of the things that you're discussing? You talk about just like film appreciation. Like today we're going to talk about structure. Do you ever go into about talking about screenwriting or is it like, or about character development? I mean, I'm sure you cover so many different topics, but, what are some of the things like you take into consideration when you're putting the itinerary together?
Well, I'm mainly a screenwriting professor. So I teach screenwriting, intro to screenwriting. Mitch teaches the advanced screenwriting at the moment. One of these days, maybe I'll teach that as well. It's just a matter of the openings and so on. So mainly I'm a screenwriting professor. As far as film studies, I co-teach with Mitch on a couple of things, like mainly historical. They're often classes that are kind of melded with the history department a little bit. Okay. So we have one called Ancient World in Cinema. So we'll talk about period piece, things that are about ancient Rome, Greece, and so on. And then there's like a hero's journey in cinema that we teach as well. So we get even more Roman, Greece, but also Japanese and Chinese. Like we watch Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and we watch Hidden Fortress and things like that in that class. So, and then I've taught intro to cinema, just simply like an 8-week course on the history of cinema, which is crazy to squeeze into 8 weeks. But as far as that goes, I just kind of want, look, here's the thing, and this is not to be like to degrade people by any means, but young people these days, they're just not quite as attuned to cinema as we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And it's just the nature of media, right? There's different things to put your eyes on now. So it's just a given. And I blame the parents. I'll be honest with you. I blame the parents. A lot of these kids, their parents just didn't show them movies growing up. And I don't know what happened because these are all Gen Xers like me who were obsessed with film, video stores and everything's like, why do you not sit your kid down and show him Jaws, for crying out loud? Screenwriting class starts now with Jaws. Before we even start the class, everybody sits down and watches Jaws just as a reference point, because 80% of the class, maybe more, has never seen it.
About to ask you that. So when you do that, do you always start like, who has seen this? And like, and you said, it's just like, it sounds like just a handful of hands go up.
It's usually him. And sometimes it's like the two middle-aged people in the class, you know, that raise their hands. So I'll be like, okay, look, we need a baseline, because Casablanca I did once as well, because with the baseline, every question that comes along, you can at least go, okay, everyone in class has seen Casablanca. When this happens in Casablanca, this is why.
Sure.
And that way there's no confusion. Because when I first started teaching it, I was teaching an online course through the library here in Kansas City. And I would say things like, everybody's seen Star Wars, right? And not a lot of people had seen Star Wars. I'd be like, shoot, okay. It's something that's everybody's seen. I realized I just need to make sure everybody's seen one of these like landmark movies where these different examples of, you know, structural examples, tropes, character beats, whatever, are all present, right? And Jaws is a great one. Jaws is all is more like a mission thing for me now, though. It's like Mitch and I both are on the mission to make sure everybody continues seeing watching Jaws. Like that, there will not be a generation gap who has not seen Jaws. So I show them Jaws, and then we start the class the next week. So we watch it in two parts, and then we break it. I show them the breakdown, all the elements of screenwriting, elements of structure. And then break it down using Jaws, like sequence by sequence, right? So it's like, okay, I know this is a lot to take in at the beginning, but we're going to do this and we're going to do it with Jaws. And then we go backwards to formatting and more remedial ideas. And then I just have them do, like, the first writing assignment is write the first image of the script, period. Nothing else. Just bring me in, properly formatted, bring me into the script and tell me the first thing we're going to see on the screen. And it cannot be the character. Just the face, like you can't start with all caps, George 25 sits at a chair, and you sure as hell can't start with waking up to an alarm clock. You will not, I will send it back to you. I will send it back to you and you will do it again. And I've told them this, like, unless you can come up with the most creative way. And like one of the students was like, what if the alarm clock wakes up to the person? I was like, no, like, just stop thinking that way. So really it's a matter within intro to screenwriting. It's a matter. I don't exactly say this to him, but I kind of don't care what the script is about. I care that they know how to write a script because they're not let's face it. They're not going to write a good script in intro to screenwriting. It's just not going to happen. Why even endeavor to it? What I say you endeavor to in this class is just knowing how to put it together. And once you've got that foundation, go to advanced screenwriting, where then you can start more talking about the more complex elements of what makes a great story, and then how to put that in screenwriting form. The one thing, though, I do stress is character. So I want them to go, when they go into advanced screenwriting, I don't want them to go in with a premise. It's not about premises as much as it is about the character to me. Premise is important, but whose premise is it? Who is it that's involved? And like when I assign log lines, which yes are the hardest thing to do, you're required to start with when A. So when A and who's the character, and then tell me with the rest. And that way it keeps them focused on who the story is about, so that it doesn't just become another, like a lot of times it's Game of Thrones or Hunger Games or something. Everybody's premise is similar to something they've seen before. And fine, but I want to see a unique character. I want you to flesh something out character-wise first. So I want everybody, we're constantly talking about character, character, character all the time in intro while we're just also learning these building blocks in order to just learn how to make the page look right and to put together a screenplay that makes some kind of sense.
Okay. You were talking about like trying to use a movie that everybody was familiar with. And I've done this presentation, kind of like the basics of screenwriting. And the movie that I use as a great example of structure is The Wizard of Oz. And I go through, like, here are the plot points, here's what happens, and I, you know, make the line of dialogue or the reference or whatever. And I always say, has anybody not seen it? And I was stunned. I've had two people who raised their hand and say, I've never seen it. And the first guy who ever said that to me, he was probably like in his 80s or at least in his 70s. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I just never really felt I needed to. I said, okay, well, you know, then I highly recommend
he remembers
see
when it.
It
came out. Like, could he was be, like, yeah, we all thought it was crap when it came out. And I didn't think.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
But just because, yeah, it is getting to the point where, you know, it's harder to get younger people to kind of like appreciate older films, not just because they're older, but because the way they're telling the stories. And so, and I always figure, you know, Wizard of Oz is one of those movies that I figure, quote unquote, everybody has seen, but apparently not.
Yeah. I mean, it's still pretty seen, I think, but, you know, when we were growing up, it was on TV once a year, right?
Right.
And it was kind of an event, sort of the same way that Ten Commandments was around on Easter, right?
Yeah.
Every year there was a Sunday night, I think, where I think it was a Sunday night every time where The Wizard of Oz was on. and it was the black and white, not the sepia and all that stuff, right? Like, it was like not quite right, but it was, I watched it every single year, and it is amazing. It's a structural, like, you know, archetypal film. Like, so many stories can kind of just be hung on the same framework as Wizard of Oz, that you can kind of teach. That's a good one as well, to teach everything off of. I mean, I just watched, have you seen Oz, the Lynch Oz documentary yet, about all these critics are giving sort of like multiple video essays that are linked together about how influential the Wizard of Oz is on David Lynch.
Oh,
and it's just amazing.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, it's on, if you have the Criterion channel, it's on there. And I think they are releasing it as a disc as well. It's interesting. It's very interesting. But yeah, it's, that movie is so unbelievably influential. But I don't think of it as something to show 18-year-old kids now. Not that I wouldn't, but that I want to kind of show them something a little bit more that I think they're going to be more...
And more resonant.
Something a little more adult and resonant. Mm-hmm. And Jaws is interesting because, so I have, every time we watch a movie in screenwriting class, that's the other thing I do, is it is a bit of a film appreciation class. Most people wouldn't teach screenwriting that way, I don't think. But to me, it's, let's talk about these different elements of screenwriting and then actively search for them as we watch a film together. And while we're doing that, you're gaining, you know, film literacy simply by watching a movie you should have already seen, right? And so every time we do this, then I create a discussion online and everybody has to take part in the discussion and write what they thought. And then I have a few question prompts just to lead them to talk about the specific screenwriting elements that I mm-hmm. wanted them to see. And when Jaws, so every time I do Jaws, it's always, I didn't think I would like this movie. I really didn't think it would be that good, but, and almost all of them are blown away by it. Right?
That's what I did want to ask you that. Yeah. Like, what has been the reaction, especially the past couple of years, about people, especially people who've never seen it, and maybe they've heard of it. It's, oh, it's that shark movie, and that's all they know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, do the gasps and the screams come at the appropriate time? Like when the head pops out of the bottom of the boat, I'm sure everybody, you know, loses themselves.
When the leg falls.
Oh, yeah.
The one that gets the most, I think for some reason, Ben Gardner's head is too chintzy for him now or something. It doesn't get the jump scare that it used to.
Okay.
But when the dude's leg, because that's when the dude's leg falls to the ocean floor, it's so kind of out of nowhere in a way. Like, he just got attacked by a shark, yes, but then it cuts to a pristine, like a lovely shot of the ocean floor, and you're thrown off for a second. You're like, huh, and then a leg just falls, and everybody always goes like, oh, like that to it. I'll tell you the one I got. I actually had to sub for Mitch in his intro to cinema class the other day, and when he was doing New American Cinema, and he said, show whatever you want, you know, for the 60s. And so I showed Rosemary's Baby to this big class full of people that none of them had seen, literally zero of them had seen. That one got a lot of reactions, I'll tell you right now. That one definitely was a gasper for people. But and again, you know, hands went up. They all, almost everybody in that class loved Rosemary's Baby. And then I grade for that class. So I was grading the responses to it, and people were very positive about it there too. So it's like, just show them these movies. I think they'll appreciate them. You know, I really do. I don't know if there's anything I've shown which really didn't work. I showed them Attack the Block. Have you seen Attack the Block?
Oh yeah. That's a great movie.
So I wanted to, so we were talking about character, and I was, as an example of character arc, I said, I want to show you a film where the arc is very strong, right? Like, so the beginning, I don't want to go so far as like do Mike Lee's Naked or so. Well, that's probably not that strong of a character arc, but I want to start with a movie of a character where the protagonist does something borderline unforgivable, something that you would think this person is a horrible person for doing this, right? But that will then completely redeem them to literal hero status by the end. So Attack the Block's perfect, right? None of these kids had seen Attack the Block, none of them. And I was like, oh, this might be an interesting treat. I didn't really say it. I didn't want to raise expectations, but in my mind, I was like, ooh, this might be a treat. And they were ecstatic. They absolutely gushed about this, about Attack the Block, absolutely gushed about it. And I was like, that movie came out 13 years ago. Why haven't they seen it? This is the state we're in. It should be a cult classic. There's no doubt. That it should be a cult classic.
Things are just different.
I think it is, but things are different. Mm-hmm. And now these, mind you, again, I'm not degrading anyone. These are film students. They have chosen to take film studies as their major. And I'm kind of like, why did you do, what got you to do this? Like, I don't know. It's hard to see it as an older guy. You know, it's kind of hard to see it. Me, I watched as many movies as I could growing up. And, you know, my parents showed me some, and then I'd sneak away to watch ones that I wasn't supposed to and all that stuff. And that just doesn't seem to be happening anymore. I mean, at least not as on as big a scale as it used to. But nevertheless, these are good kids, and I think they're doing a great job. And I'm happy to show. I love showing people movies that I love, so there's no problem there. So I'm having a fun time doing all this stuff.
Okay, well, John, this has been fantastic. We could probably keep this going for at least another hour or so, but you know, we only have so much time available today. Right. So, John, quick question: where can people find you online? Do you have social media platforms?
I do. I'm on Twitter, or whatever it's called, X. I do forget sometimes what my handle is. I know I'm Jingular at Instagram, and then on Twitter, where I think. Sorry, I'm going to look it up because I want to make sure I get it right. On Twitter, I am Engel Films. So if you want to follow me there, I'm not some big Twitter, not big poster or anything like that. But, you know, occasionally I have an idea or two that I'll tweet out that 9 people will see and 1 person will like. So maybe you could be the second person that likes my posts. I don't
Excellent.
Know.
And as we mentioned earlier, if you want to hear more about John talking about stuff, you can check out the Alien Minute podcast and ABC Devo and ABCDTOS.
Yeah, there's ABC Devo, ABCDTOS, soon to be ABCDTNG. It'll all be at the same place, though, I believe. And, yeah, I guess that's it. We have a Patreon. Alien Minute has a Patreon, but come listen to the show. You'll learn about that there. And if you like us enough and you want to support us, I'm not going to push that on here, but there we do more general cinema, like what are you watching this week kind of talk. So maybe that would be interesting to people. And Mitch is great. Mitch is a wealth of knowledge and a long career in Hollywood and all that kind of stuff. So he's very interesting to listen.
All right. Fantastic. John Engel, thank you so much for being here today. This was great. I just loved it. And so many great things to talk about your stuff and about your work as a writer and as a in the film education department. Just fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Okay, well, that's John Engel, and I'm Paul Zeidman. You can check out my screenwriting blog, Maximum Z, at MaximumZ.blog. I'm on Twitter at Maximum_Z. I'm also on Instagram at Pez Screenwriting. And feel free to follow this podcast Twitter account at PodcastCWL. We are always up for new followers because we just like getting to meet people. Like you said, he is John. I'm Paul. This has been the Creative Writing Live podcast. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and most importantly, go write something.